Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. I tell you, I'm almost giddy right now. We have our special guest this week is David Owen from Mastic. If you've been listening to the podcast any amount of time, you know how much we are fans of Mastic over here and all of the great services and things that they provide over at Mastic. If you are in this business as a small independent trucker, whether you have just a one truck charter or if you got a small fleet, if you're not associated with Mastic, hopefully tonight maybe be going a long way into convincing you that you might need to get involved, that you might want to take an opportunity to just go see what they got to offer. Not that we're trying to sell or push them off on anybody, but I just think that and these comments that I'm making are unsolicited. David didn't ask me to say these things. I do not receive compensation from Mastic. I'll just, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm just telling you how much of a fan and how much since I've been in business for myself since 2010 when I started. And I started out right out the bat. I heard about Mastic. I heard about the benefits that they offered. And before I even bought my truck, I went up, got involved, took the I think they call it the Nest class or whether where they have a class and some other stuff. I don't want to ramble on. We'll get into the show, but I just want to express to you guys how excited I am to have David Owen joining us again tonight, and I'm looking forward to him telling us more and more about some of the things that Mastic has to offer and some of the other things that's coming down the pike when it comes to the industry where it concerns the small guys. That's really their avatar. That's their niche. That's what that's who they cater to. That's who they market to, is the smaller guys and the small fleet. And they are definitely in our corner. But with that being said, let's start off our show in the normal fashion. We'll kick it off with this week's DAT trend lines report. And this week, we are showing that diesel fuel prices have remained unchanged as far as the national average is concerned. We're showing the national average fuel price for diesel right now at $2.64 per gallon, which is, once again, one of the biggest reasons to get involved with Mastic is their fuel program. But for the week of January the 11th through the 17th, truckload rates began to decline last week with slower demand met with looser capacity. As a result, the load-to-truck ratios fell for each trailer type, reefers, flatbeds, and dry vans, taking pressure off of what had previously been high rates at the turn of the calendar year. So let's take a deeper dive and see how each one of those segments were performing as far as the rates were concerned on the spot market over the previous week, starting out with dry vans. And starting out up in that northeastern corridor, we're showing that an outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $2.20 per mile. Moving down to the southeast and mid-Atlantic states, we're showing an outbound spot market rate averaging at $2.35 per mile. Jumping up into the Midwest region, we're showing an outbound spot market rate of $2.77 per mile. Moving down to the South Central region, we're showing an outbound spot market rate of $2.28. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an outbound spot market rate of $2.55. Changing gears, jumping over to the flatbed portion of this report. Starting out in the Northeast, we're showing an outbound spot market rate for flatbeds at $2.39 per mile. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, we're showing an outbound spot market rate at $2.61 for flatbeds. Jumping up into the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates averaging at $2.85 per mile. Moving down to the South Central region of the United States, we're showing outbound rates at $2.31 per mile. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds at $2.19 per mile. Jumping over to the temperature-controlled or reefer portion of the report, starting out in the Northeast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate at 238. Dropping down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast, we're showing average outbound spot market rates at 235. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $3.11. Dropping down to the South Central region, we're showing outbound rates at 274. Wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing outbound spot market rates at 282. This week, bad broker report. I'm happy to report that there are no new entrants to the bad broker report from what we talked about last week. So that's a good thing. Everybody seems to be paying their bills on time, and nobody to need to be made aware of this week. And so with that being said, let me go ahead and jump over here and grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, good evening. How are you?
We're doing well, Rico. How are you?
I tell you, I'm like I said, stated at the top of the show, I'm really excited. Got a lot of things that I'm getting ready to try to unfurl for this year. I'm looking forward to some big things this year. But I'm mostly excited tonight because we've got one of my favorite guests that's joining us tonight, Mr. David Owen.
I agree. David always brings on some good points, and tonight is a perfect night to have him with the change of the guard in Washington tomorrow. One of the things that NASDAQ does, and I don't want to start talking too much about it or let Dave tell us more, but one of the things that NASDAQ does do for its members is it is a lobby group as well. They have a full-time lobbyist in Washington making sure that somebody's watching our back. And I've met I don't remember the gentleman's name, but I've met him a few times at the NASDAQ convention, and he's a real prize. He's a great guy to have on our side. So with no further ado, I think we should bring David on.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and welcome David Owen of NASDAQ on board. Good evening, David. How are you?
I'm great, Rico and Chuck. It's nice to be on your show, and thanks for all the kind words. I'm humbled by all the words. By the way, Chuck, the guy's name is Jim Edwards, and he's a PhD doctor, Jim Edwards, and he's the nicest guy in the world. He's been involved in the aisles of Congress and on different levels for probably 25 years. He's representing us, and along with, you know, Henry Seaton and I spent 12 or 15 years unpaid and unsolicited going to Washington and flapping our arms and on behalf of small carriers, and we were lucky enough to run into Jim, who lives up there, and now Henry and I can kind of let him lead the pack, so to speak, because we're a little bit too close to the flame, and a lot of times we get, if you know what I mean. And Jim,
I've watched you in action, man.
Jim is a very, very tactful, useful spokesperson for us. And one of the things I like to point out, and thanks for the plug on their new entrance survival training course, Rico, but one thing I like to point out to that class and to you guys and your listeners, we started going to Washington, Henry and I, you know, NASDAQ is now 32 years old, and he was a law partner in Seaton and Husk and a law firm up in Washington. Now, he's from Middle Tennessee, and he's since moved back to Middle Tennessee, but he was up there, and I would go and spend, we made, six or eight trips a year from the early 90s, mid-90s, up until about 2008, 9, or 10, whatever we met Jim. And like I say, we have strong feelings about small trucking and independent contractors, and one thing that we didn't anticipate, Buster Anderson and I, when we started NASTIC, is we did not anticipate the fact that there was such a vacuum or lack of representation with that particular niche in trucking. And it turns out, as we've found out over the years, that's the largest for-hire segment there is. And they had nobody to speak for them. So, actually, we just kind of filled a vacuum. But I point out that we started doing that for all small trucking companies, all independent contractors, not just NASTIC members. And we continue to do that, and we've actually – I like to feel like we've made a difference in some areas, and I know we have.
Oh yeah, definitely. You've obviously made a huge impact on our industry. You know, you guys have done. You're really saints of our industry, and I don't think people. I don't think you get the recognition that you and Buster deserve for putting your necks out there and just doing what you've done.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure I want all that recognition right now.
Well, that brings us on to why we chose this night rather than any other night to have you on. There is going to be a changing of the guard tomorrow at some point in the morning, and the current administration is leaving, and there will be new players. And I have to tell you, I will bet money on it that by Thursday or Friday, the sun will shine on America again, in spite of everything going on. And, you know, you have a very strong country there. Remember, I'm a Canadian. But what do you see as the impact for the trucking industry and the brokerage industry, for that matter, from the change of the guard, having the Democrats in power rather than the Republicans?
Well, let me start by saying that we have really made an effort, and Jim Edwards and Hank Seaton and David Owen and Buster Anderson and anybody that's speaking on behalf of NASTIC, we take it seriously about speaking for our members. And we have 13,500 trucking companies in our group now. We've grown in the last decade from 2,800 companies to 13,500. So we're doing some things right. But in that group of carriers, we've got people on all angles of the spectrum of politics. And we try real hard to remember. One of my favorite, I went to the University of North Carolina, and Michael Jordan was one of my favorite athletes. And when racism became such a inflamed topic, he reminded his minority friends that Republicans buy sneakers too. Well, Democrats drive trucks, and Republicans drive trucks, and aliens drive trucks, and we've got all kinds of people that we represent in our group, and we really try to be as apolitical as possible. How, having said that, we're unfortunately for the last 32 years. It's been driven home to us that we're in a politically incorrect industry. It's just not popular to go out there and say, hey, I really love those big trucks, or hey, I think truck drivers are great. Oh, it's just not politically correct to do so. And you won't see any politicians or any legal beagles or lawyers being even respectful to big trucks and drivers. So that's a battle we face regardless of the administration and regardless of the philosophy of the administration toward trucks. We were encouraged during this past year, which you know everybody was happy to get 2020 behind us for 100 reasons, but right. We were encouraged during the crisis to see how our guys, our truck drivers, our small companies once again came to work, rolled up their sleeves, didn't slow down, and made sure there weren't any shortages of food and medicine and fuel, and that we did not suffer the consequences that probably a lot of countries did because their distribution system broke down when COVID hit. And we were 100%. Encouraged by the fact that the past administration recognized truck drivers, actually talked about truckers. The Secretary of Transportation talked about truckers, and the President talked about truckers. And that was the first time that's ever happened in my lifetime. So the other thing that how we look at the political side of trucking, our industry is heavily, heavily regulated. We have 700 pages of regulations that our carriers have to abide by. We're looked at constantly. I mean, through a microscope, our drivers, our trucks, the condition of our trucks, the condition of our drivers, the condition of our maintenance programs, and on, the condition of our tires, our brakes, and everything else. And quite frankly, I think we've been somewhat abused by the I call them billboard ambulance chasers that have devastated the trucking industry with nuclear verdicts and frivolous lawsuits. And unfortunately, that particular tort reform, if you want to go there, has been on every politician's plate from both sides of the aisle now for 25 years, but it seems like nobody ever does anything about it. Matter of fact, it keeps getting worse. One of the problems that we have in the industry, in my opinion, is the fact that there's so many lawyers. The lawyers go to school and they got to make a living, so they write the laws, they interpret the laws, and they enforce the laws. And so the more laws there are, the more they criminalize everybody, the more work they've got to do. And unfortunately, that's the way the trucking industry is viewed. So I guess I'm dodging your question because I don't have a crystal ball. I've always leaned toward a political party that seems to be more in line with capitalism, more in line with the marketplace, more in line with small business. We represent small businesses, mom and pops, and Rico knows, and you know, Chuck, almost every trucking company in America, a long haul full truckload anyhow, started out with one truck and one driver.
Yep.
And all of that became possible.
J.B. Hunt included.
Beg your pardon?
J.B. Hunt included.
Exactly, the Giants and that was made possible. NASDAQ was made possible. Independent contractors were made possible by the deregulation of the trucking industry back in 1980. They invited small entrepreneurial. A lot of them were ex-farmers. Truck farming was huge. They invited them into the industry, and they did away with the Interstate Commerce Commission. And basically done away with common carriage almost per se, because everybody into the middle 80s and early 90s turned to running under contract carriage rather than common carriage. There were no tariffs. There was no Interstate Commerce Commission to control the industry. So, and here we are today. And those independent contractors and small carriers represent 99.9% of the for-hire carrier capacity out there, and yet it seems like the federal government is bound and determined to identify them as the deplorables or the bad actors, when in fact, as you know, I've preached for years the safest, most profitable business form in trucking is a one guy, one truck, one trailer operation. They're the safest by far, and I've got numbers that back that up.
100%. You know what? You can't argue with that. And I don't, you know, I was a huge proponent for deregulation up here in Canada, because we deregulated a little bit later than you did, about 5 or 6 years later. But what we really got, we didn't get deregulation, although some parts of the industry were deregulated. We got re-regulated. And when you look at the at our industry compared to other industries, if you do something wrong in the trucking industry, they will pull your license if you really mess up. You know, they will do that. We've all seen it. I was just reading today in a food publication, because I study them too, because our company Travix hauls a lot of food, and I read about a juice packer in the Pacific Northwest, somewhere around Washington, that got caught packaging inferior product that, if I'm not mistaken, had arsenic in it, way beyond the legal allowance of arsenic in juice that was going to children and to universities and wherever. The government did shut them down, but didn't put them out of business. They said they couldn't produce any more juice or pack anything until they cleaned up their act. My God, if that was a trucking company that did something like that, they would just pull their license, and you wouldn't get any insurance. You'd be done. So what?
Well,
you know, we're always. Go ahead.
Well, and I just wanted to point out that not only are we under the microscope of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration down here and the government, but we've got to satisfy a whole three or four tiers of insurance. If the government wouldn't put that company out of work, the insurance companies down here sure as hell would. They wouldn't write them.
Exactly. Well, David, I want to ask you a question and just get your take on this. We all know that insurance rates are just climbing, and for somebody entering into the industry, it is next to impossible for a new entrant to get affordable insurance. And listening to the Sirius XM radio, the Truckers Channel, I'm listening to some of the some of the people that speak on that channel, and they're saying, well, the answer is going to be if the new administration puts forth legislation that's going to outlaw the independent contractor being contracted to a motor carrier and make them an employee, which is the craziest thing I've heard since the 70s. But there's, and I don't know whether this threat is real or not real, but if it was real and this was really going to happen, what happens then? Because these guys can't go out, you know, they can't get insurance as a new carrier. That's not going to happen. You know that as well as I do.
Well, there is a little bit of good news, I think. If, in fact, the new administration doesn't squelch the new rule or the new definition, we've looked into what the Department of Labor came out with just last, like 10 days ago, identifying or clarifying that owner-operator model and clarifying what an employee is. And from the way they worded the final rule, it appears to us and our interpreters that that is helpful, not hurtful. Now, and I don't know why the new administration would want to go through the 2-3-4 year process, if they go through the Administrative Procedures Act process. I don't know why they would want to try to change that, and whether they could or not. And I don't even know that it would be productive. But that's the good news. And I think that there are some folks up there that realize that particular business model is not only worth continuing and protecting, it's extremely valuable. I mean, I don't know how in the world you think it's a positive to do away with the ability for an independent contractor to be an independent contractor or to be a leased-owned independent contractor.
Right.
The safest, and I'm going to give Landstar a plug here. Down here, Landstar, well, I did a thing on safety comparing all the 36 largest trucking companies back a decade ago. When CSA came out down here, I got the data, the starting data, the ending data from SafeStat, and I did an analysis on all 35, 36 of what I call the mega carriers, and that's the 36 carriers of the United States, not Canadian not Canadian truck companies,
right,
but four hire carriers, long haul, full truckload, and there's 36 of them at the time. And I compared them on number of fatalities per truck or per miles driven and number of accidents per million miles driven and number of fatalities and injuries and property damage. And I had three different criteria. And I came up, I love the word logarithm because they love to throw that word around. I don't have a clue what that means.
Right.
But I came up with my own logarithm to analyze those three variables in what I call true measurement of safety. You know, there's a big difference between compliance and safety. If you just looked at the compliance end of it, the assumption is if the more compliant a carrier is, the safer he is. Well, I beg to differ because that's not true. The safest guys were not necessarily the most compliant. And the most compliant were not necessarily the safest. Anyhow, the company that stood out to me was, and on my logarithm, on a scale from the worst numbers were like 2021, and I could spend the night trying to explain what that means. But the worst numbers were around 20, and the best numbers were around 5. And the safest large company, large carrier in America, 2010 when CSA came out, and my little model was Landstar. Landstar had a rating of about 5.23 compared to Warner at 20.45. So Landstar in my little deal was almost four times safer than Warner. And Landstar at the time was running about, I want to say they were running about 9,000 trucks, and Warner was running about 8,500 trucks, but I'm not sure. That's been a decade ago.
Terrible.
Anyhow,
yeah.
My point is, Landstar, guess what? Landstar doesn't own any trucks. Landstar doesn't hire any drivers. All of their drivers are leased-owned capacity owners. They bring the truck, the trailer, and the driver to the equation, and their safety numbers were four times better than many of the other large carriers. Now, and I've shown that particular graph and that particular data to everybody that'll take a look at it in several administrations, and I get eye rolls. And I just do not understand why. I mean, I get it. If we've got people being paid cash to mow the lawn, they're not paying their taxes, right? Well, guess what? Those guys that are mowing the lawn aren't going to make enough money to pay any taxes.
Right.
Why do you have to determine whether they're an employee or an independent contractor? And why don't you leave the independent contractor status alone in trucking? It works just fine.
Yes, and the second we mess with this thing, how the heck are you going to get your fruits and vegetables, especially to market? Because the vast majority of fruits and vegetables in the United States are hauled by independent contractors.
Exactly.
There's not a lot of companies. I don't know of very many large companies in the United States that have refrigerated trucks that haul fruits and vegetables. They haul meat, maybe, and chemicals, but and frozen, you know, frozen food, but they do not haul fruits and vegetables for the most part.
Well,
so how are we going to get those products to market?
And I don't think, for instance, I don't think the state of California is out to get the independent contractor, but that AB5 thing certainly has a potential of doing that. And the newly elected administration, there's been some chin music about them bringing that issue back up again, which is, in my opinion, destructive. I'm like you. I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I'm looking forward to next week. I'm looking forward to the rest of this year. I'm looking forward to getting off this dadgum couch that I've been on and going back to work. I have had to cancel my annual conference, and I've had to cancel the last three or four or five new entry survival classes, Rico. I'm doing my first new entry survival class in about 4 months. Next month, and then I'm going to do a two in March. But, you know, I usually do one at the Mid-American Truck Show, which no longer exists now because people can't breathe on each other. And I usually do one in Dallas, but I don't think the Dallas show will ever be back.
Really? Because I got a letter. I just got a letter about 2 months ago saying that they weren't going to have it for 2021, and they were looking forward to seeing us because we exhibit there every year. For 2022, but you think they're going to cancel that one?
You talk about Mid-America or Dallas?
No, Dallas, the GATS show.
Well, I hope not. I mean, that's in August or September.
Yeah,
and to not even try to have it in some form or fashion in 2021. I certainly can't blame them for not doing that, because I spent a lot of money, a lot of time. My people worked hard, and we had a really bang up annual conference scheduled. And I was wrong. I thought we'd all be, the curve would have been turned, and we would be coming back to work, and it didn't work. I had to cancel my annual conference, and I can't blame them for not planning one of those things, because you have to. You know, people don't realize you plan those things 1, 2, 3 years out, and it's not like a ball game getting rained out. It's a disaster when it doesn't happen.
100%, and you know, I think a lot of these, unfortunately, and I'm not talking about yours because yours is a little bit different. I've been down there a few times and love it. It's kind of like old home week. But I think in a lot of industries and a lot of organizations, they're not going to have them because of the cost savings. This is a little bit different. I think that trucking is still one of those businesses where we don't get a chance to see each other very often. And when we get down to meet meet and break bread with our competitors and our suppliers and just people we know, once a year in November down in Nashville. I think we do good business there. And I think trucking is still, so far, one of those industries that people would love to be able to do more face-to-face. But the world today doesn't allow much of it. Even without COVID, so many of our customers who we used to see don't have the time to see us anymore. Who knows which way that's going to go, but talking to customers of ours, who have been going to different trade shows for years, and they're saying, well, they don't know if they're ever going to do them again.
That's kind of where everybody is. We've been to both. Well, we've been to the Mid-America Truck Show, good Lord, for 30 years at least, or 28 in a row. We get a ton out of that. It's, I mean, like you say, you're not selling anything. You're actually, at Mid-America, I get to see maybe 100 or 150, 200 of my members without having to go visit them. They visit my booth.
Yes. Yeah.
It was beginning to have this, you know, the Dallas show was just coming into its own. It had just really gotten some traction and was really beginning to, you know, to be valuable to us, but not as valuable as Mid-America. But I don't know if it'll make a comeback or not. I swear, I just don't know. I don't know. You know, I think Randall Riley owns that show now.
Yeah, they do.
And
I think they do a pretty good job.
Oh Lord, yes, they're fabulous, and but I don't know whether they'll. If I was disappointed to see there, I would have liked to them have waited another month or two before they said we're definitely not having it this coming fall. So it'll be 2022 before
right.
we have
and,
an
you
opportunity
know, my
to
guess
go to
is
Dallas.
They had to, David, I'm going to just make a guess here. The people at Randall Riley probably had their back up against the wall. There was probably an exit where they could have gotten out of the financial commitment for that space for August 2021 show. And if they did it by this date, there'd be less of a penalty or no penalty, I would imagine. And they ran for the hills, and I don't blame them.
I don't, and I'm saying that, Chuck, I'm saying the same thing, and I know all about that because we had to negotiate with the Omni down in downtown Nashville when we decided that we just could not have it, and they were very fair. You have to reserve that hotel space or that convention center space 2 or 3 years out, and. They spend a lot of money and they have a lot of money invested in you being there, and the ripple effect is just horrible. I can't imagine what kind of economic impact it'll make on the city of Louisville not having the Mid-American Truck Show there, because for the last 30 years they filled up every hotel room within 100 miles of Louisville.
100%
for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, that's their second biggest venue next to the Derby every year.
Oh yeah,
and, you know, all those you know, when you look at that ripple effect, the car rentals and the cab drivers and the person that checks coats at the restaurants and all those restaurants, those wonderful restaurants downtown Louisville. My God, there's not you know how, they look forward to those things, the Derby and the truck show.
Don't forget about the casinos over the river.
Oh, I forgot about that. but it's, you know, brings a lot of money into that area.
Sure does.
You know, and it really hurts. It's just one of those things. David, what do you think about with this new administration? What do you think they're going to do with infrastructure? Because that's a real trickle down.
I think the infrastructure is something, no kidding, that both parties are dead set on taking head on. I think the difference is going to be in how you pay for it. I think both parties want the infrastructure to be at the top of the list, and based on President-elect Biden's choice of transportation secretaries, that's one of his biggest qualifications, is that he is big on infrastructure. I know he's big on sidewalks. I don't know how he stands with bridges and roads, but I hope that that's
somewhere.
I I hope that's an indication that that's going to be at the top of the debt, and everybody wants that to happen, and that needs to be a bipartisan effort. Now, how to fund it? I guess there's 50 different states, and there's 50 different theories on how in the world the states are going to come up with their part of rebuilding the infrastructure. Remember, the national road system is supported by the federal government and the state government, so it's a
right.
It's a joint effort. And unfortunately, I think they're we're so diametrically opposed in theory in many, many ways in this country, and one of them is urban versus rural. I mean, the big cities look at transportation in one way, and the hundreds of thousands of small towns look at transportation entirely differently, don't they? I mean, we don't talk about rail systems down here in the South. We don't talk about bullet trains. I mean, we talk about roads and bridges, and so. It's hard for us to understand. When I say us, one of the reasons why we are so far to one side or the other on a lot of issues is that all of my members are from where? Flyover states. All of my members are from small town America. All of my members are located in towns with 2,000, 4,000, 12,000, 22,000 people. And they're small town, they're family owned businesses. So we can't even imagine what it's like to not have a car or commute to work every day or to ride the subway somewhere. I mean, or we can't imagine why we trucks would have to pay $20, $30, $40, $50 just to go and deliver a load into the city of New York, for instance.
And, by $150 if you have to cross.
Well, I mean, you know, then there's no end to it. I did notice one thing that was interesting, though. It just came out. It was in one of the periodicals. I can't remember which one. Maybe Transport Topics, but they had a list of the 10 worst roads. An independent group did this study. Now, David Owen and Hank Seaton didn't do this. they had the 10 worst road systems by state,
right?
1 through 10, and they had the 10 best, no, the 10 worst were 40 through 50. The 10 best were 1 through 10. And it was real interesting what those states were. And you can look that up. It's an independent study. But amazingly enough, all of the states that were in the top 10 in infrastructure were rural type states. Tennessee was ranked seventh, if that gives you any indication, or fifth, I think. Anyhow, and all the worst were around the cities, you know.
Sure,
they're big cities. There's so much density, a lot of them northern cities, where you got ice and the roads are.
Yeah.
It's just hard. It's just a bigger challenge. But I mean, anyhow, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all, because the weather plays havoc with roadways, and you add the bad weather, the change, you know, just what winter brings, with the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of vehicles in any of the, especially when you get into the northeastern states, anywhere from Massachusetts down to the Maryland-Virginia border, up and down 95.
Right.
It's brutal.
Right.
And those roads are treacherous.
Yeah, they're you can break an axle in the potholes.
Oh, easy.
And
all the time.
you know, and it's And I didn't want to say this, but I guess I might as well, since I brought it up, all 10 of the top 10 were decidedly red states, and all 10 of the worst 10 were decidedly blue states.
And I can tell you, as an innocent bystander sitting north of the border, the answer for that is because your Republican states are predominantly in the south, where they don't have bad weather.
Where they don't have that challenge. You're right. No, I totally agree. I don't think it's a political. I don't think that's a a political.
No.
I don't certainly don't think they're doing it on purpose.
It's a geographical. You know, when you have tens of millions of people, you've got using roadways, you've got different challenges for everything. I was just explaining to a client of ours yesterday that was trying to ship single pallets of ice cream to New York City, that he better think of a better way of doing this, because it makes no difference to us whether we're taking one pallet or 24 pallets of his ice cream from Canada. It's still going to cost us the same to deliver, and it's not economically viable to take a single pallet. And a lot of companies have chosen to use some sort of a distribution network, or not even enter that New York, the New York City metropolitan area, not even go try to market their product in there unless they've got huge volume, because it's not worth it.
Well,
it's too expensive to deliver there.
Getting to that, and that makes the point I'm getting ready to make as well. I think that entrepreneurial small businesses, companies, need to sit down and do some due diligence and decide what areas of the country are truck friendly and what areas aren't. And if I own, and of course I don't own a trucking company, but if I own one, that's one of the first things I would do. And there are a lot of states, and for whatever reason, that aren't truck friendly, that I wouldn't go in. I wouldn't drive through, I wouldn't deliver to, and I wouldn't pick up in. And I mean, I know that that's easy for me to say when I'm not even, I'm not in that seat. But I'd be doggone if I'd go through the state of Rhode Island after what they've done.
Yeah, you know what? I can't. It's a small state. I think it's the smallest state you have. And it is one of the tougher ones. And that whole Northeast, you can't make time there. And your chance of having a crash somewhere in the Northeast is far greater than a lot of other areas because it's so congested. And, they've hardly built a new roadway through there in years. And they've added more and more people.
Well, I'm talking about is they've set up about a dozen or half a dozen to a dozen points of entry where they're charging tolls against semi-trucks from out of state. They're charging them to come into the state on I-95 and 295 and go across the state. And they're not charging straight trucks, and they're not charging their own citizens. They're just charging interstate trucks. It's being challenged by the American Trucking Association. It's in court right now. But to me, it's clearly unconstitutional what they've done. It defies even halfway logic of the interstate commerce clause.
Yeah, but these guys are desperate for money.
they ought to try building something or creating some commerce up there.
It's funny. There's a few states. Go ahead, Rico.
Well, I wanted to try to jump in real quick. We got about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to give David to kind of tout a little bit more about, for the guys that are listening in, for the people that are listening in, the small, because, we kind of have same core audiences when it comes to the people that we are definitely, I don't want to say marketing to, but I guess who we're advocating for, the small guys, the smaller fleets. And I just wanted we got about 10 minutes left in the show, and I wanted David to give him an opportunity to tell our listeners and the people that are listening in some of the benefits that come along with NASIC. And I'll be, you know, they definitely, the number one thing that got me as a small business owner and trying to grow my fleet, the number one thing, of course, we always want to save money. And anytime we can save money on fuel, that's a direct to the bottom line benefit of your company. Anytime you can save money on fuel, whether it be by being more fuel efficient or just being able to save outright at the pump, which is what NASIC's, one of the main benefits of being a member of NASIC is. I just wanted to give David an opportunity to talk a little bit more about the different benefits that NASIC has to offer for small guys and small fleets.
Well, I love the opportunity, Rico. You know, I'd rather talk about it than anything else. And you're right. Our fuel program is I think it's close to the eighth wonder of the world. We've been able to deliver it double-digit discounts to the smallest of trucking companies, down to one guy owner-operator trucking companies. We can literally give that guy and a guy with less than five trucks typically the buying power of a guy that's got 250 trucks. And the discounts are cost plus. There's a zero transaction fee, and we've got a network of 1,100 truck stops. So it's a phenomenal, and there's no question about it. That's why our phone is ringing off the hook and people are wanting to join NASIC. We're involved, though, in so many other things. And one of that part about our presence in Washington has I've probably spent more time on that in the last 15, 20 years than any other one item. So that's really important. But the one issue, Chuck, that you brought up and we didn't get to talk about much is insurance. And we have a spinoff company, a partner company, an insurance agency, a full service truck insurance agency that we started 10 years ago called NASIC Insurance Services. And we're not going out there trying to write everybody. We're not trying to go out there and be Great West by any means, but we're focusing on startup companies and smaller carriers and trying to combat the idea that, unfortunately, Ann Farrow talked about, well, I'm going to make it very difficult for anybody to get into this industry, and I'm going to make it very difficult for them to thrive in this industry or stay in this industry. They're going to have to prove that they're not a bad actor. And unfortunately, in so doing, the insurance community is absolutely not interested in writing a new entrant or a guy with less than four or five trucks. They will write an independent owner operator with one truck, but they'll tell him if he adds a truck, they'll cancel him. The premium structures are absolutely ridiculously high. You can't even imagine how. I mean, I know you can, Rico, because you've been through it. But I've done a study, and we've got that MSP program, the Management Safety Program that we have. We've now got about 4,000 trucks in that are doing that, and it's 10 or 11 different things to help them to run safer. And we're trying to connect the dots between the carriers that are on our Management Safety Program with insurance. So we're trying to prove the point that if a company takes a leap of faith and makes it, buttons up his trucking company and makes it safer from day one, then he deserves a much lower premium than somebody of like size or experience. So that's the argument. But I just got through doing a pretty in-depth study of about the 400 or 450 trucks that we write from our own agency, okay? And just to give you an idea, and I'm going to throw these numbers out there, and they're mind-boggling. Our the insurance community thinks that a break-even point on loss run ratios is 65%. If a company has 65% claims versus their premium payments, then the insurance company says they break even. So 65% loss runs should get you renewed at about the same place you were last year, if that theory holds correct. Our collective loss runs for the 400 trucks we're insuring is around 11-12%. That means if we're paying out $5 million in premium, we're having $200,000 or $300,000 worth of claims. Our frequency rate was in the single digits for carriers. For all of our carriers in all of the categories, including MSP and the ones that weren't on MSP. And I'm getting ready to publish those numbers, and I'm going to go to I'm going to find me some reinsurer that has got the courage, or the that I if I can convince them of the wisdom of doing this, and I'm going to form. I'm tired of begging somebody to cover a small guy and then pay $14,000 to $20,000 a truck a year for the insurance. It's just not right. You know that out of the 400 companies or 400 trucks, out of the 400 trucks, I think that represents about 250 companies. Well, obviously, a lot of them are one guy, one truck companies.
Right.
Almost half of those companies we've been insuring for 4 or 5 years, and they've never had the first claim. You can't imagine the number of small trucking companies that go for years and never file a claim against their insurance. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Sure.
And
that does not surprise me.
Well, it didn't surprise me either, because that's why I started the insurance thing. It made me angry when I'd be talking to a small carrier, and this goes back 20, 30 years. I'd be talking to them, and I said, well, tell me about insurance. Well, I'm paying too much. Well, what kind of loss runs you have? And over and over again, the guy would say, I've been trucking 9 years. I've been trucking 14 years. I've been trucking 8 years, and I've never had a claim. And it's mind-boggling. And I'm not talking about a little bit of difference. I understand it's hard to write a one-guy, one-truck new entrant because you don't know how good or how bad he's going to be. But somebody that's been in the industry, somebody that's driven a truck, been a million-mile driver, and he's in the industry and he's gone 5 years without a claim and you can't find anybody to write his insurance for less than $15,000 is criminal.
Well, the insurance companies are claiming that the reason for this is because none of them are making any money. That's what they're claiming, that they've had losses for years because of these nuclear settlements. And we've had a friend of ours that's come on the show many times.
This.
Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Let me do this. I mean, we got about 90 seconds left in the show. So, David, I want you to tell everybody how they can get in contact with you guys. The hour just kind of blew by on us. Let people know how they can get in contact with you, and we'll get ready to land this puppy, and hopefully we look forward to maybe getting you back on again soon.
Okay, Rico. It's our 800 number is 1-800-264-8580, 1-800-264-8580. We're there Monday through Friday from about 7:30 to 5. And we've been virtual, working from home for almost a year, but we're still setting records. So we're answering the phone and we're taking care of business. So call us, and call us even if you don't want to join NASDAQ. Just call us and talk. We'll talk to you. We get 1,200-1,300 inbound calls a day now. So we'd like to meet you. If you run long and you run full truckload, and you're less than 100 trucks, we can probably help you one way or the other.
That's great.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the time again, David, for coming on the show. Chuck, let the good people know how to get in contact with you, and we're gonna pull the brakes on this one for on this episode.
Okay. Give me a call at extension 203, and the phone number is 800-388-4352. Again, extension 203, or email me very easy, Chuck@traffix.com, or you can private message me at Chuck Snow, CEO. And David, I want to thank you for coming on with us tonight. As always, you're fantastic to have on.
Well, thanks for the invite, and I thoroughly enjoyed this, and thanks for the opportunity. Rico, take care.
Take care. God bless.
Thank you again, David. Thank you again, David. We want to thank you for David on, for Chuck Snow. I'm Rico Muhammad. This has been the Rates and Lanes podcast. We want to thank you guys, the listeners, for taking time out of your schedule to tune in and listen. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but we're eternally grateful that you decided to spend a few minutes with us. And for that, ladies and gentlemen, we look forward to talking at you again next week. Got a lot of big projects, a lot of different changes we're going to try to be implementing this year. We're going to try to maybe start having a little bit of video or something like that. I'm working diligently on trying to bring that into fruition. But until then, we'll give you updates as we get it developed. But until then, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to be safe out there. I want you to keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. God bless you tonight, and God willing, we'll talk at you next week.
Catch you on the flip-flop. God bless.